It's Wednesday, the 15th of April, 2015, and this is my first full day in Riyadh. I'm going to be picked up soon and taken to the college, Faqih College of Health Sciences, which is where the nursing program is run, and there's a two-day scientific program there in which I'm giving three papers, two today, one on scientific writing and later on reviewing the literature, and then tomorrow I'm doing one on care of older people. I don't think I'm doing anything this afternoon, so I hope I can get back to the hotel to do some work, because that's beginning to pile up. I gave my two papers at the first scientific forum at Faqih College of Health Sciences this morning here in Jeddah. My first paper was the opening paper of the conference on scientific writing, essentially about writing for publication. This went down very well. I was able to start early, so I got a little bit longer than I would otherwise have got, and there was time for questions, and there were lots of these, and one or two questions during the presentation, so that went very well. The only problem was the sound. I really like to use Thai microphones, clip-on microphones, so that you can walk around, but the first one they gave me just created feedback into the speakers, and they gave me another one which really didn't work, so we went back to the first one, tried to clip it lower down and everything, it just wouldn't work, and the technicians were very helpful, but it's very disrupting with people actually coming and clipping things onto you while you're trying to speak, and of course you then lose the audience for a while, and they couldn't seem to grasp that the problem wasn't with the equipment that they were clipping onto me, the problem was with the amplifier, and all they had to do was just turn it down slightly, but they just didn't go and do that. So eventually I ended up with a handheld microphone. So you've got a handheld microphone in one hand and the slide changer in the other, and then when you try to take a drink you've got to put something down, so it was a little bit awkward from that point of view, but nevertheless it went fairly well. I could have stood behind the rostrum and spoken into the microphone there, but I just find that hopeless, and these days when there's a laptop on there you can't really position any notes very safely, they tend to fall off, so I usually do it without notes anyway, but I do like to have the PowerPoints there just to remind me what's coming up. But I've done that talk many times before, so that wasn't a problem. And then I did a paper on systematic reviewing, searching and reviewing the literature, and it was a very general overview of systematic reviewing, including systematic reviews and meta-analysis. And I've never actually conducted a meta-analysis myself, but of course I read plenty for the journal, and I do know the technicalities of how to do one, but I always feel a little bit out of my depth when I'm actually talking about it, but I was able to get across what the basic tenets of systematic reviewing were, and also how to look at a forest plot and what a forest plot meant in a systematic review. However, somebody was supposed to speak about evidence-based practice, and they actually had to drop out because of illness. And the dean of the school, Dr. Amani Babgi, gave a paper on a systematic review that she'd done for her PhD. And it just almost perfectly confirmed all the points that I made, but was actually presented with real data. And it was a really good compliment to my paper, so things actually worked out very well. I was picked up at 7:30 this morning. I got to the college and they really seemed surprised to see me. Apparently I shouldn't have been picked up until 8:30, but I managed to get onto wireless and do some work. There were some other interesting papers at the conference, and then lunch break with the usual gallons and, you know, tons of food, and gallons of hummus and rice and all sorts of things. They just produce far too much food here. And of course the pressure to eat is enormous, so you just have to say no after you feel you've had enough. And then I was able to get back to the hotel at 1:30, and I've had an afternoon working here, which means finishing off editing a few papers for the journal, checking on the proofs and correcting them and sending them forward. What I try to do is move forward one thing each day. I try to deal first of all with all the papers that have come in and overnight, and what I do is either I put them forward to the editors, after they go to them after they've been checked by the managing editor, Di Sinclair. So either they go forward to editors, they get rejected, or I can put some papers to Nursing Open that I think won't make it through the Journal of Advanced Nursing, but may make it at Nursing Open. And there's just the occasional paper that I see that I like that I do ask Di to get back to the authors to make some corrections and then put it into the system. But actually that's very rare because we get so many papers. We get hundreds every month and we're pretty much at the same level of papers per average over the months as we were at this point last year. Then I've been shortlisting for senior lectureship interviews at University College Cork. That wasn't a problem. The big problem seems to be finding dates when all the shortlisting panel members, who are all full panel members, can actually meet and carry out the interviews. Initially we were given some dates in early June and I could do them all, and then no, some people couldn't do these at all, but very few people could. We were given dates the next week when I'm in Hong Kong and in Korea, couldn't do them. Then a third set of dates out of which I can actually only do one, so this is going to prove quite difficult. And the rules there apparently are that everyone who's been involved and appointed to the panel and involved in the shortlisting must be on the interview panel. I'm just wondering how they're going to be able to get this together, because it's sometimes impossible to get everyone together and it may be a very long time before we can. So I've done the shortlisting for that. And then I've been asked to do a seminar at Napier University on impact as it was described in the Research Excellence Framework, the panel that I worked on until the end of last year. And so I've given a title of Impact Explosion Fallout. What have we learned about impact from the 2014 research assessment exercise? So I'll be going up to Edinburgh in the middle of May to do a PhD viva at the College of Humanities, and then on the next day I'll do a seminar at Napier University, so I'll actually stay up there for 3 nights in total, which is no hardship. I'm always very pleased to go and visit Edinburgh. The other things I've been able to do this afternoon, as well as finishing off some Jan work and doing the shortlisting, are just to tidy up some odds and ends on my to-do list, which seems to grow longer every day. It's always nice to tick a few things off, deal with my emails. I try and keep my email up to date back home. I try not to let anything slip. One of the things that I've been trying to do while I've been away is organise a date for a PhD viva for one of my colleagues back in Hull. Again, this involves coordinating external examiners and a chair and the student. And there's an added complication here in that the examiner is, one of the examiners, the external examiners, I'll be the internal examiner, is in Australia, so we're going to have to do this by Skype or teleconference. We're not sure which yet. And for us it'll be 9 o'clock in the morning, and for the colleague across in Australia, of course, it will be 7 o'clock in the evening, something like that. So that's going to be a little bit awkward. And so we've got a date, we've got a chair, we've got a room. We haven't quite decided on what the medium is going to be by which we're going to communicate, but I'm quite sure that we'll sort that out in due course. I prefer teleconferencing because it's got a much better likelihood of working. I find Skype a little bit fragile and tends to go off now and again. It's actually very disrupting for the candidate. But for the external examiner, it means that he will have to be in his office at work, which is a little bit awkward for him, whereas with Skype he can do it from home, so we need to work out the best way of doing that. These are all the little things that get in the way of good intentions. And the final thing I did this afternoon was cleared up some external examining for the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland in Bahrain. That's the RCSI MUB, the Medical University of Bahrain, where I'll be visiting next month for the last time as an external examiner, but hopefully not for the last time. And I've been helping to advise Professor Seamus Cowman there, a very good friend of mine from Ireland, on who should be taking over from me. We thought we had a candidate, but that person was unable to do it, and they do want somebody with a reasonably high profile, so I've suggested a couple of names, and let's hope that at least one of those takes up the offer. So what I'm going to do now, as the sun's going down in Jeddah is to get out and go for a 3 mile run and then try and find the fitness room and do some exercise. I'm on my own tonight, so I can actually either skip dinner altogether or have a very small one. I spend most of my time when I'm away on these trips trying to avoid eating rather than actually eating, because you just tend to eat too much, and despite getting exercise, most of the time you're sitting doing nothing. And at the beginning or the end of these trips, well, this is not a long haul, it's probably a medium haul, you're sitting for hours on end on a plane again, but usually being fed. So tonight I'm on my own, and I can get up to my own devices, as it were, and try not to do any more work today, and perhaps read some of the book that I've got with me. And I will have to actually do some work. I've just noticed I've got to prepare a few notes for my lecture tomorrow on caring for older people, which will be my final input here. And tomorrow, Wafa's brother is going to take me to the old part of Jeddah and so show me a museum and a souk there. That could be good. The problem is it's going to be directly after the conference is finished, and I'll still be in a suit, so I'm going to try to negotiate somehow to get back and get changed before we do that. And then tomorrow I have dinner with Wafa and with Dr. Amani Babki, the Dean, and a couple of other colleagues from Faki College of Medical Sciences. And I have a feeling that this won't be the last visit I'll be making, so hopefully we can make some plans for the future. I've been running along the front. It's called the Corniche. It's just ideal for running, and I found out today that it's exactly a mile and a half long if you start at the hotel gates. So you make your way back here, and it's 3 miles plus a little bit getting back to the hotel front door, so it's just ideal. Temperature tonight was slightly lower than last night, I think, but still about 25, 26 degrees centigrade, getting on for about 50% humidity. I've run in much hotter conditions in Singapore and much more humid conditions, but I usually take it very easy there for a start. You'd never be able to turn up in Singapore and do 3 miles, not ever. So it's been quite good here, but it's really extraordinary running along the front because all the families are out. They come out at around 5:30, because work finishes quite early here, and they look at the huge, very impressive fountain that spouts up from the middle of the bay. It's probably one of the biggest ones in the world. I guess it's bigger than the Golden Jet or the Jet d'Or in Geneva. I don't know how this one is powered, because there are no mountains around here. I think the one in Geneva's powered by the pressure of water coming down off the mountains around Geneva, and I guess it's perpetual and will keep going as long as the rivers don't run dry. But this one here is probably powered by some other way, but it is very impressive, and you can see it in the dark as well, because the light, what light there is, catches it. So what you get along the front are just literally hundreds of families. You've got to be careful because there are kids running everywhere, and women with the abaya and the yashmak on, looking out through little slits. Not all of them here, not all of them by any means in Riyadh, but plenty of them who I don't think can really see you coming, so you have to be very careful. I saw a woman out running last night with a full sports kit on underneath an abaya, which is this ghastly black garment that the women have to wear over their clothes here and that Western women have to wear as well. So clearly you're not allowed to undertake sports as a woman without wearing one of these. And I don't mind saying, even for public consumption, that I think it's absolute and utter nonsense. But anyway, so what you get is lots of these black shapes moving around. These are the women. The men are all dressed normally. The kids are mostly dressed normally. Some of the younger girls are wearing the abaya. And I would say, frankly, down there that the majority of the women do cover their faces. Some women in Riyadh, I noticed, cover their faces completely. They don't even have a little slit to look out of. They've obviously got a thin black gauze, which they can see out of, but you can't see into. I did see this in Oman as well. And I'll be absolutely frank, when they stand still, you don't know when they move, if they're going to go in one direction or the other, because they look exactly the same both ways. Again, I don't mind saying for public consumption that I think it's absolutely and utterly ridiculous. However, the women here don't seem to complain. The women that I work with don't cover their faces, they do cover their hair, but they say it's all very liberating not to have to dress up every day, and you can put this thing over your clothes. I'm not so sure that's exactly what I would call liberating. I don't think many Western women would think it liberating. And of course they can't drive here, so again they say that's liberating that they don't have to drive, they have a driver. I can't see what's liberating about not just being able to step out of your front door into your own car and drive away. Again, I think most of what happens here and in the interpretation of Islam is just completely ridiculous. And to be quite frank, a great deal of my Saudi colleagues think likewise. However, you have to, as my friend Seamus in Bahrain says, just let it go over your head, because you won't change it. And why would you even want to? But I will never accept that it is in any way acceptable to treat women the way that they're treated here. So nevertheless, it's very pleasant here, as I say. The temperature and the humidity, as I said, 25 degrees centigrade around there, 50% humidity, just beyond bearable really for running. You sweat profusely, and I'm quite sure if I weighed myself before I started running and weighed myself when I came back that I'd have lost a few pounds. It certainly severely dehydrates you. In fact, it's almost impossible to get rehydrated, even drinking several bottles of water. But it's good training and should stand me in good stead for the Beverly 10K race, which is coming up in a few weeks' time. So I think I will try and find some dinner tonight. It's always interesting to eat by yourself in these places. The problem here is that I like to eat earlier than it is now. It's now 7 o'clock here, but most people here don't eat until about 9 o'clock, so I have the dining room to myself if it's even open. And I might go and have a drink, which of course will be a non-alcoholic cocktail, but they can be quite fun too, and at least sit out in the hotel for a little while and do some reading and a little bit of work out there. After dinner I revised my slides for tomorrow. I'm using much the same talk as I gave in China a couple of weeks ago, but I've cut it down a bit and added in some figures that are relevant to Saudi Arabia on the ageing population. And then one other job I did tonight, which is something I do on every international visit, is I write a report, confidential to the recipients. I send it to my dean, our international coordinator, any other specifically interested parties, and I sometimes send it to people in the international office or to the pro vice chancellors, just a report on the visit. It's a habit I've got into ever since I went to Sheffield, and then I've kept it up since I came back here, partly because in Sheffield we had an appalling person running the school. She then became Pro Vice Chancellor after I left, apparently, and now she's about to retire. And she was always on my back about travel and how much it was costing and such like, but of course my travel never costs my university anything, because I only travel when I'm invited and when other people are therefore paying for it. So part of the purpose of the reports was to clarify that my work, apart from obviously my salary at the time, but I still maintain all my emails and all my work back in the university as much as I can, is cost neutral to the university, and how the rest of the trip or visit, as I prefer to call them, was provided for in terms of transport, accommodation, meals and such like. But it's also an opportunity to make a record of the visit, as much for my own interest and for my own failing memory as anything, so I can list the names of the important people that I met, and I can give myself some bullet points and action points to follow up on when I get back, or to ask other people to follow up on. And this has been, from that point of view, so far a fairly successful visit, with potential PhD students and potential collaborations and other work and other visits to Saudi over the next few years. And I like to be, as I say, as transparent about that as possible with everyone I work with, up to the Vice-Chancellor if necessary, and record all the outcomes, good outcomes and successful outcomes, and even to record things we haven't been able to follow up on, and to make sure that it's all transparent above board and that nobody can say that they didn't know. It has been described as being a little bit defensive at times, and I took some advice from a very good colleague on this once, and she suggested to stop putting the finances at the top because it was very defensive, but I insisted that I keep it in somewhere at the bottom because it is important, but to start off these reports with what the benefits from the visit were. And I always do that now, and that's a way of focusing my mind on exactly what it was that was achieved specifically and generally. And of course, always generally, there's keeping the profile of my university up in whatever region I'm in, but also there's catching up with old PhD students who have really been the mainstay of my international travel over the last 10 years or so. People who I've trained in the past and now work in various parts of the world, or who I've helped in some way or another with their PhDs or publications, then inviting me to come and work with them. So just to make a record of all that, and to follow up on things like potential PhD applicants and inquiries about business opportunities and other types of collaboration. I'm fully aware, as I'm sure anybody with any sense is who's reading these things, that 90% of what I put down will probably never take place, and I don't note absolutely every single approach I have or suggestion for collaboration. I only note down the ones I think that will be, on the one hand, worthwhile and potentially work. And I know that out of those, as I say, 90% probably won't work, but if 1 in 10 of these collaborations or PhD applications or business opportunities comes off, then as far as I'm concerned, the visit has been a success. One of the other successes of these visits for myself and other colleagues who've worked with me in different parts of the world has been collaborative publications, and for myself and one of my other colleagues at Hull at the moment, papers that we submitted to the last Research Excellence Framework, all of these were collaborative papers, and all of them, I think, without exception, were collaborations with international colleagues, and with international colleagues that we'd met through our PhD work and international travel. And this has got a very direct effect on the outcome of the Research Excellence Framework, which brings in money into the university and into the faculty, and so therefore at no cost to the university, through these collaborations they get outputs which are of high quality, which then do bring money in. So it's interesting to see how all these things come round. They're all very slow, they don't produce instant results, and in parts of the world like where I am at the moment in the Middle East and where I was recently in the Far East, you can't push. You've got to be patient. You've got to wait until things come from them. So for the impatient deans or managers or pro-vice chancellors or administrators, sometimes things don't seem to be going quickly enough. But if people just wait, then some of these opportunities do pay off. So that's my thought for tonight. I didn't make any recordings today. I think you've probably heard enough of me speaking at conferences, although I probably will try and remember to record a little bit of the proceedings tomorrow. And of course there have been no aeroplane noises today, and there won't be any tomorrow, but there will be some on Friday as I make my way back to Riyadh and then back home to the UK.